Benzinga's Cannabis Capital Conference returns to Miami Beach on April 11th and 12th. I may be biased, but I'm telling you, this event is a can't miss. Join us to build the foundation of your next game-changing deal with CEOs and decision-makers from leading companies in the industry. We're talking about the next wave of businesses, strategies from the most profitable businesses, and exactly what investors are looking for in a challenging market. Go to bzcannabis.com to meet your next investor, co-founder, and new friends. A little pro tip from me, right now tickets are $1,000 cheaper than prices at the door. Get yours now. What is up? We are back for episode 2. Sometimes I forget if it's Tuesday or Thursday. I'm not going to lie. This is Elliot Lane, co-host of Benzinga's Cannabis Insider, with the one, with the only Argentinian action figure himself, Javi Casse. What up, my brother?
Pretty good, pretty good. I was just surprised. We just went live. There was like no intro or anything.
You didn't tell your plan. You didn't get the plan today. Yeah, we like to keep you on your toes.
That's what I get for being late.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is. Yeah, you get punished. With around here, y'all, if you have any questions, stocks you want us to look at throughout the show, we are on here for 30 plus minutes, just running through some news, running through some awesome interviews. We have two exciting ones for you today. That being said, though, Aaron Thomas, let's get that quick intro going. Get us pumped up. All right, we already got some friends in the chat. Change Agent, what's up, my friend? Good to see you back with us. Javi, we're not going to do a ton of news today. We have some awesome thought leaders here. We're going to hear about some perspectives of the psychedelics industry from some crypto personalities, question mark. I may be reading too much into that, but I'm excited to hear some different insights here. And then we're going to follow up with some more cannabis insights from a thought leader there as well. But Javi, anything you'd like to say before we dive in?
No, sir. We have a jam-packed show today. Maybe we do some news later. Let's bring on our first guest, Mr. Aaron Thomas. We are having Mr. Jeremy Gartner and Mr. Brock Pierce from Mystic Ventures.
Let's do it. Welcome on, gents. You are on Cannabis Insider. You're probably like, what the heck is that? Jeremy and Brock, good to have you both with us. How are you doing today?
Thanks so much for having us. We're doing great.
Yeah, grateful as usual.
I love that. Always grateful.
Do you want to disclose where you're calling from, or is it a secret?
No. We're in that timeless place, otherwise known as Puerto Rico.
I love that. Puerto Rico. So, gents, what is Mystic Ventures? I love the name. You're giving me some adventurous vibes here, but tell us about it. Somebody's jumping in.
My guard dog just went in full guard mode. My apologies. Let me bring them up. Always expect
this is a pet-friendly show.
He's telling us what Mystic Ventures is. I understand.
Put the dog outside or something.
Put them outside. Yeah, sorry.
No
so
worries.
Mystic Ventures. So sorry. Mystic Ventures is a pre-seed to Series A venture fund focused on the emerging psychedelic medicine market and more broadly, the elevation of consciousness. We take a very broad view of the sector and have a pretty wide-ranging mandate from our investors to invest in a variety of different types of startups, from drug development to drug discovery to software as a service, data services, VR companies, sound therapy companies, even consumer breathwork apps, and CPG brands. So it really runs the gamut.
Yeah, we're pre-seed, seed. We've done 20 deals in the last 14 months. I think making us the most active investor in the psychedelic space. Again, We're not doing public companies. We are identifying very early businesses. And I was one of the founders, put together Blockchain Capital, which was the first venture capital fund in the crypto space, dedicated to the space, that funded all the Coinbases and Krakens and BitGos and all your sort of early companies. And Jeremy Gardner joined me at Blockchain Capital as an entrepreneur in residence before he went off to start his own fund, Awesome Ventures, which was very successful and eventually moving into what we're doing now, Mystic.
And, you know, how do you transition from crypto to psychedelics? Like, what do you
You read my mind, Javi. I'm like, right? Like, talk to me about it.
Crypto, it's like very tech-oriented or oriented in finance and disrupting monetary systems in advancing technology. But it, as it relates to markets, right? And psychedelics is or tries to be the opposite, right? Where it's all about people and mental health, of course.
Disruptive still.
Well, so I'd say there's a couple of things that those two sectors have in common. One is they're very pioneering in the sense that they're breaking down stigmas and barriers that are, you know, have a lot of perceived, call it risk. So there's some pattern recognition there where you'd see the types of individuals in this sector or that sector, you might see some commonality. Obviously, both are highly regulated industries that require people that understand regulatory frameworks. You're betting on, you know, potentially new compounds in the same way that you might be betting on new technologies. There's some, you know, some commonality there. And one of the things that you'll also find if you haven't spent much time in the crypto industry is the sort of polymaths that exist. When you spend time with, you know, the pioneers in crypto, they are not just sort of all deep tech developers. You are dealing with full spectrum sort of individuals, and that full spectrum may also connect to, call it, the psychedelic field.
I think very importantly as well is the fact that as a venture capitalist, you have to be passionate. You have to care about what you're investing in, because entrepreneurs, especially the best entrepreneurs, really see that, and they value investors that care as much about what they're doing as they are. And, you know, I don't think there's any lack of passion between the two of us. But both of us have very, you know, we were passionate evangelists for blockchain technology in the earliest days. And I think that transfers over really well to the sort of advocacy that's now needed in the psychedelic landscape. And so there's a huge amount of crossover just from our roles as evangelists for this nascent field of business.
Go ahead.
And I spend a lot of time dealing with governments. And government around the world, legislative here at a local level or a state level. Actually, I think it was the president of the Senate that just walked in, causing the dog to bark.
Come on, man. Come on.
That humble brag over there. Just like,
but a big part of it is actually having those conversations. I won't mention it, but a member of Congress was just down here at a federal level and spent a week staying with me. And Jeremy got to have these conversations for 2 days about this.
If you have an extra room, we're open.
By the way, I'm famous for being a consistent and generous host. So both of us to perhaps if you want to come down. But I'd say legislatively, you do need people that know how to articulate and communicate these sorts of messages, because mental health, as correctly pointed out, is a very, very real issue, and a bigger issue now than it was even in the past.
Amen.
And the tools that we've used historically to solve the issues of mental health clearly have not been working. And I think it's in the forefront of this field that we're finding and demonstrating, you know, real potential solutions to really solve these problems that, you know, blockchain is solving, call it the infrastructure layer of our future, driving efficiency, transparency. But none of that really matters if we don't find inner peace and if we don't fix the humans, if we don't fix the self.
I'm gonna take you up on that one where you say you're a great host. Right after the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference, April 11 and 12th, we have the Psychedelics Capital Conference on the 13th in Miami at the Fountain Blue. And on the 14th, I am flying to Puerto Rico for a week. So expect a call from me.
Fully noted.
Yeah. Hey, Avi will bring some good product.
I will bring some steak for that dog. That's what I know.
That being said, gents, I do want to say I didn't see what else it said, but the fact that Jeremy's wearing a DEA hat on a Cannabis Insider show is just phenomenal. Oh, yep. Full on DEA hat. Obsessed. That's awesome, man. So I want to get into a little bit more about your psychedelics investing, right? And I understand the passion behind it. I understand why. But, you know, when we look at the industry as an investor, you know, it's been a bit turbulent. You know, you've seen maybe in a different way, you know, some of these emerging markets take hits and take some, you know, you have to have some sort of proven structure to make money sometimes to have investors put money into you. But you're pretty much saying the opposite, that you are looking at seed stage companies, you're looking at high growth, high risk companies, and you've done that a lot. Can you tell me what puts that level of faith? Like, what brings that level of faith and fire in for these companies to be able to come to you and for you to have that much faith in this industry as it stands right now?
Well, I think Brock began to touch on this. But if you see where we are today when it comes to psychedelic medicine, it's a very different time than the 50s, 60s, or 70s. I mean, look at when the war on drugs began with Nixon. And at that point in time, you had two broad government policies or positions that kind of shaped government policy. And that was a war in Vietnam and effectively pro-segregation, anti-civil rights movement. And you had people dropping LSD, realizing segregation was wrong and that we shouldn't be in this war in Vietnam. So it was this existential threat to government policy at the time. And thus, all these drugs became illegal. And the narrative around them became very toxic and stigmatized. And you fast forward, you know, almost half a century later, and it's a very different point in time. The biggest issues in our society are almost entirely mental health related. Talking really broadly, like just like the divide in our political system and our inability to have healthy conversations with one another, talking about anxiety, depression, suicide, addiction, the rates of all these mental health kind of incidents are rising exponentially. It's a very frightening time, and we don't have good solutions. You know, the pharmaceutical solutions on the market today, they're band-aids. They help repress these feelings, but they don't help address these feelings. And what we have with psychedelics that perhaps distinguishes them slightly from cannabis from a regulatory perspective is the fact that the efficacy seen in now hundreds of scientific studies and academic studies, it's 10x in many cases any other treatment for a wide variety of indications over any possible other treatment on the market. And so there's a sense of need right now. And so what you see on the regulatory front and at the legislative front is a bipartisan, a full-throated endorsement of making these solutions more accessible. Maybe not at the DEA, they are a terrorist organization, but other than that, the FDA is green-lighting, fast-tracking, multiple companies, including some of our own portfolio companies. We're not seeing any level of meaningful public or government opposition to what these companies are doing. So forget what's happening in the public markets, because that's just a bloodbath generally, biotech in particular. Obviously, there's a huge amount of risk in psychedelics. So the prices of psychedelic publicly traded companies, that doesn't affect our thinking. It's like, what is happening on the drug approval front, what is happening on the legislative front. You know, you've just seen so many new bills getting passed. I mean, everything is optimistic besides market sentiment.
And optimistic.
And so we can't even consider market sentiment because we're investing for decades, you know, our fund life is 7 to 10 years. And
interesting.
It's multiple funds. So whatever's happening in the market right now doesn't affect our thinking.
Totally, totally. And I love what you were just saying about, you know, the potential of these psychedelics. And Tuesday I was talking about one that I was looking into, you know, because psilocybin I've looked into in detail, right? And LSD and MDMA, and I knew the potential of all these. And a few months ago, a friend of mine started talking about ibogaine. And over the weekend, I spent some time studying ibogaine for addiction recovery. And as you mentioned, like suddenly it's like 70-something% efficacy and people are not relapsing versus 14% for a 12-step program, right? So there's clearly something there. And also, I think, you know, these substances are also helping people open up to the possibility of therapy, right? Like all of these treatments that people take a psychedelic substance tend to be accompanied by therapy, by actual therapy with a therapist, right? And that is something that I feel like it's making Americans a lot more inclined, for instance, to approach these sorts of treatments. I'm from Argentina. It's like the country with the highest rate of therapists per capita, right? It's no stigma here, right? But in the US, when I told my friends, hey, maybe you should go see a therapist, they would say things like, you know, no, I'm a strong man, I can do it by myself. And it's like, dude, these guys who fought like 3 wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are going to therapy. It doesn't make you any softer, right?
Yeah, well, so going back to this Band-Aid analogy, it's like with current, you know, psychiatric treatment, for the most part, it's mostly drug-based and it's for the rest of your life. So it's like putting a Band-Aid on for the rest of your life or just sucking it up and getting stitches and actually addressing the issue. And it throws the entire, you know, pharmaceutical model on its head. But in terms of healthcare costs and the, you know, both lifelong and intergenerational price of not addressing trauma, it is a much better approach to medicine. It's taking us back to much of human history where medicine was really about healing rather than just feeling better.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So, you know, they're probably sitting there chilling with you right now. So you're very curious if you can give us a sense of, you know, the discussions that are happening. And I don't think you have to go specific, but, we, you know, just to give our audience a sense of whether it's timeline or interest on the political landscape when it comes to psychedelics. What is the next catalyst that maybe investors can look for?
Well, so most of my legislative background or, you know, my conversations in government were tied to crypto. Mm-hmm. Last week, I was up in the New Jersey State House. The State Assembly or their House passed their crypto legislation unanimously. It's now in the State Senate. And I'm working with the state Senate to craft or fine tune, you know, the public and private sort of dialogue to stem the sort of loss of innovation out of New York. So New York is effectively, due to bad legislation, written them out of the future of finance. You know, their relevancy is fading. It's not gone because New York has so much. It takes a while to drain all of its future away. But New Jersey is thankfully recognizing, you know, the opportunity. Rather than these entrepreneurs and businesses leaving New York to go to another country, another part of the world, or another part of the U.S., all they've got to do is cross the Hudson River. And so I'm very optimistic and excited to be helping the state of New Jersey really say yes to the future and become one of the biggest beneficiaries of that change, and to bring that economic development, just across a small, you know, body of water, and all the job creation that comes with it. And so, you know, I don't know at a macro level where we are, but most of it is just knocking on a lot of doors. I was chairman of Commission 52, which was I was the chairman and sponsor of a group to push through some legislation federally to issue a congressional gold medal to the Iranian hostages from the U.S. Embassy in 1979. If you remember the movie Argo, most of you probably not. Most of us are probably not old enough. I was born in 1980, so this they were hostages while I was in the womb and an infant. But we got it done. We got 300 co-sponsors in the House. Eventually, we got the U.S. Senate to pass it unanimously, the U.S. House to pass it unanimously, and President Biden signed it into law right before the New Year's. And so, you know, I mean, I'm trying to understand our legislative process and develop relationships, both state and federally. And who would have thought that I'd be, you know, pushing through congressional gold medals for, you know, U.S. Embassy hostages in 1979. But it demonstrates someone that obviously thinks geopolitically, right, thinks about foreign policy, thinks about the planet at a macro sort of scale, and certainly creates goodwill, certainly in the State Department and obviously with you know, our men and women of service. And so I can't give you the long-term answer, but as Jeremy pointed out, the war on drugs has clearly failed. Having 2 million mm-hmm. Americans locked up in the criminal justice system for things like cannabis is insane. You know, Portugal clearly has demonstrated that decriminalization is a more effective tactic, right? Don't spend the money locking people up and giving them a criminal record that puts them forever in a, you know, a vicious cycle where they can't become productive members of society for doing something that was most likely harming no one but themselves. You know, that's not the answer. Yes, drugs are a problem sometimes. And yes, some people do need help, but that's normally not locking them in a cage. It's actually spending less money to get them the treatment they need to address the underlying issue. As Jeremy kept saying, we spend too much time trying to put Band-Aids on solutions, trying to find treatment to problems versus actually going deep and analyzing the underlying root cause and trying to nip it at the bud, you know, actually healing at the root. And so a big part of it is evangelism. It's getting people comfortable with the conversation. It's human nature to fear that which we don't understand. And there's a lot of programming around this stuff. And the way that you conquer fear is with knowledge, with information. And so a lot of it is just being in the room, being able to have a conversation in a safe space where someone is comfortable revealing their ignorance or their lack of awareness, and to have that, you know, informative conversation that allows us to engage in a dialogue to where we can create a better future for all of us.
That's exactly right. It's a huge part about coalition building, and we're seeing it happen. It's a very bipartisan issue, you know. Crenshaw in Texas, hardcore GOP Republican, AOC in New York, both introducing bills in the House to give veterans access to psychedelic medicine. You know, the biggest champion out there today might be Rick Perry, the former hard right Republican governor of Texas. And then you have all these state level initiatives, such as in Oregon, which legalized the medicalization of psilocybin, Colorado, which decriminalized all psychedelics, multiple state level initiatives, and then many more like citywide initiatives that have decriminalized these substances. But I mean, the map is just changing on a monthly basis. And then at the regulatory level, what's really promising and very exciting for us, because it's our biggest investment, is MAPS, which has been working for, you know, better part of 3 decades to advocate for psychedelics. They've recently concluded their phase 3 studies for MDMA. It's breakthrough level results. 67% of all people that went through just two treatments with MDMA no longer showed or qualified for PTSD. I mean, it's once again, levels of efficacy we've never seen in treating mental illness. It's more likely than not going to have their, much more likely than not, going to have their phase 3 trials approved by the FDA, which will require the DEA within 45 days to reschedule MDMA from Schedule 1 to no less than Schedule 3, effectively making MDMA medicalized and legal. So I would imagine within the next year, we will have medical MDMA available for no less than the treatment of PTSD. I'd say 1 to 2 year time frame for the rescheduling of psilocybin, which is probably around the same time frame I'd give cannabis, very likely, but under different circumstances. But the beautiful thing about the approach that this industry takes, which is very much based off of FDA drug approval schedules, is that once the FDA approves a phase 3 trial, which many of these studies are getting to, the DEA has to reschedule the substances. So if the substances are controlled or scheduled 1, like almost every psychedelic is besides ketamine and a few kind of weird ones, there are all these substances, once their efficacy is proven for the treatment of different indications, they will be rescheduled. But I think there will also be a legislative push. But everything is optimistic right now. And psilocybin and MDMA are really on the short-term horizon.
Yeah, I mean, this very much, and to give another analogy back to crypto, this reminds me very much from a pattern recognition perspective, like where crypto was in 2014, 2015, except for in this instance, it's more dependent upon sort of the regulatory push. A lot of people in crypto are, you know, beg for forgiveness rather than permission. This is clearly an industry where that is ill-advised. but the regulatory sort of events here, in a large part, thanks to the incredible progress and great work that's been conducted by the cannabis industry. This all seems to be, you know, flowing together and moving rapidly. And Lord knows, you know, humanity at a mental health perspective needs it. I was not too long, you know, peace on earth comes from inner peace. You know, got to find it inside and whatever whatever you as an individual need to figure that out. I just want to know that there's more options to help, you know, heal humanity.
I love that.
You're dropping some epic one-liners today.
Yeah, man, this is like a clip dream come true. But, you know, man, I love how you connect this. We need to have you back on. We've run out of time. I wanted to ask you about some of your other investments in public companies. We had Filament Health in our last show, actually. I was super impressed. I love what Atiyah is doing. But, I mean, let's save it for another show. I would love
for agreed
you to be back on.
Sounds good. And prior to Mystic, I'm an investor in both Atiyah and Filament. And I've been a donor to MAPS.
You know,
actually, I brought Rick Doblin to his first crypto conference to speak in maybe 2015, and started to connect the world, which is another, you know, where these things overlapped.
Well, Brock, let's get you to speaking on our psychedelics and crypto events this year, my friend. That would be
right.
Awesome.
Sounds good. Thank you both.
Yes, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Jeremy Gartner and Brock Pierce of Mystic Ventures. And
you didn't tell me we're hosting some powerhouses today. Jeez, old Pete's, man.
It was a surprise. You know, I like surprises. You surprised me with no intro to the show.
That's fair.
I surprised you with no intro to the guest. The guest needed no introduction, to be fair.
That's true. Well, and we're going to keep it rolling, y'all. This show is far, far, far from over. We have an awesome, awesome interview that Javier Jase himself is going to lead. Every now and then, we like to let him run solo because he is the head of our cannabis news desk and just an absolute beast on the circuit as well. So, Javi, with that being said, my friend, who do you have up next? And I'll let you take it from here.
Yes, sir. We have Mr. Dean Schwartz. He's the founder of Bud Club. Mr. AT, let's bring him on. Dean, welcome to Benzinga Cannabis Insider or Back to Cannabis. I appreciate your patience. We had some last minute changes to our schedule, but we're here now and we're here to talk Bud Club. So how are you today? And maybe tell us a little bit about Bud Club and what you do.
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me. And it's great to be here with you guys. Let me tell you just a little bit about myself and why I created Bud Club and what it's all about. Sound good? All right. So just quickly, in the way of background, I'm actually a former ad guy, and I've developed big TV campaigns for a lot of healthcare and pharmaceutical products. Some of these you probably have in your medicine cabinet, like Aleve, All Day Long, All Day Strong, NyQuil, and lots of other great medicines. But my problem really was that personally, I'm not really a drug guy, a medicine guy. I've really been more into natural medicines. I've been using cannabis recreationally and medically for probably 25 years. And I wanted to really align, you know, the work that I do every day kind of with my core beliefs and who I am and really wake up and feel good about my mission and what I'm doing every day. Right. And that kind of led me to Bud Club. And I came up with the idea actually during the pandemic because I had this thought about, well, you know, maybe I'd try some home growing. And so, of course, the first thing I did is I went online and I bought I ordered a grow tent. And that was 3.5 years ago. And you know what? The grow tent is still sitting in the box.
wait, did you even assemble it? Did he have any prior experience growing cannabis, let alone like any plant?
No. I mean, I do like, you know, I grow vegetables in my backyard.
You know? Okay, you got the green thumb.
Yeah. And also I'm a guy, I like to cook. I'm a photographer. I'm a project person, right? But the thing about the tent was too complicated, too much work. I just couldn't be bothered. And so I started kind of playing around and working with some people that I know that are in the cannabis field and really kind of asked the question, how do we simplify this thing, right? How do we make it easier, so easy that anybody can do it? You know, it's fascinating because we actually did some market research, you know, and there is, you know, with regulations changing, I'm in New York. I mean, you know, the whole East Coast is being transformed into the cannabis capital. And there's tremendous interest in home growing. And yet our research showed that only about 10% of people that use cannabis actually grow.
Yeah.
And yet they're spending a ton of money. A lot of these folks are spending, you know, using it 2-3 times a day, buying cannabis weekly, spending $50 to $100 a week. I mean, that's thousands of dollars a year, you know, and that makes me mad, right? Because you don't have to do that, right? And in fact, if you grow your own, you can actually get a better quality product, a cleaner product, no pesticides, it's not radiated, and put a lot of money back in your pocket, right? And not give it to big cannabis. And that's really the mission that I went to focus on. And so, you know, my goal here is to teach the world to home grow so they never have to buy cannabis again, right? And to do that, what we've done is we've simplified the whole home growing process and demystified it so that anybody can do it, right? And so today with Bud Club, there really is no reason to keep paying for cannabis when you can grow your own and actually have a better quality product. So that's what we're all about.
I have so many thoughts. Like, I am so passionate about home growing, always have been. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I'm from Argentina, I live in Argentina, where, you know, we don't have dispensaries, but we do have a medical cannabis program. And we've had a very strong advocacy movement around home growing. Actually, for, you know, the motto for us for legalization is no más presos por plantar, no more people in jail for growing their own weed, their own plants. But that has not been the case in the US, right? And we can go back to that discussion philosophically. First, I want to understand how Bud Club works. How is it different from an automated grow box, or like, how does it make it easier for consumers?
So, you know, first of all, Bud Club, you know, you don't need to spend money on, you know, expensive equipment, big lights, you know, big tents, things like that. What we've done is we've created these kits that really come, first of all, they come with everything you need to grow outdoors. If you want to grow indoors, we can also include an LED light. But everything is in there, you know, nutrients, pest control, you name it, it's there. And even seeds, the kit comes with seeds. We've curated seeds. We work with a seed breeder called Genome Automatics, and we offer their seeds in our kits. So you don't have to run around and, you know, go crazy ordering materials from different places. It all comes delivered to your door. Secondly, we've worked with some really experienced growers to develop a very simple three-step process, right? So simple that even beginners can follow it, you know? Again, our research showed that a lot of people are interested in it, but they don't want to do the work, right? And they think it's going to take too much time. So with our simple system, it's really easy. You know, basically the three steps are you pack your bag, right? And we have a proprietary system we've created where you're layering in soil and nutrients so that you don't have to feed the plant over time. Everything is in there and you let it cook for a couple of weeks. Step two is you plant your seed and it comes with a humidity dome. We give very clear instructions. Really? How to plant the seed, you know, not to go too deep so that the seed has a chance of, you know, poking through. You know, you get your seed growing, and then step three, you just water it, and watering with the right water and watering in the right way is critically important. But really all it involves is, you know, watering the plant every 3 to 4 days, and boom, mm-hmm. you watch your plant grow. And it's yeah. really that simple. The other thing about the kit yeah. is it comes with full support. So we offer online grow classes. It has a digital grow guide that you can use right on your phone. And we have 24/7 Q&A as well. And we even back it all up with a guarantee so that if you buy a kit with our seeds and you're not happy with it, let us know and we'll send you a refill kit on us.
Nice. I love that. Yeah. Okay. I got more questions, but you know, one of the things that is really resonating with me, right? It's growing cannabis at your home doesn't have to be difficult. I've been growing it for 15 years, right? And, yeah. and people often, you know, if you go into internet forums, everyone has their own little set of tricks and the nuances. And people ask me and I tell them, all you need is good soil,
right?
Good sunlight, yeah. some wind, and yeah. some clean water. If you get good seeds and good genetics, the results will be better. If on top of that, you add a green thumb, right? Experience and practice and a lot sure. of human care, it'll be even better. Right. But even the base result, mm-hmm. if you get a good feminized seed and all of these things will yep. be decent enough where it outperforms 85% of the cannabis you can find at a US dispensary with ultra small buds and whatever, like pesticides. Yep. Now, my question to you is, right, and because of how you describe this entire pack, my question that it comes again and again and again is, this is insanely affordable. Like, what's the catch? Like, because I've seen your kit is, like, there's kits starting at $40, right, for the entire bundle with the seeds included, which are already $40 on their own.
Right.
So, like, what's the catch? What's the trick? How are the economics working? Or is it all for the consumer?
No, I mean, very honest here. There is no trick. There is no trick. It's sticking to the basics, you know, and not going overboard where you don't have to go overboard. You know, working with great partners that have great products that go into the kit, and maybe, you know, some tough negotiation as well. But you know, it's our kits are priced very reasonably. We never want, you know, price to be an obstacle for people to start growing. And so, yeah, there really is no catch. It's exactly as you see it, you know, and we're very proud of that. It took us about a year and a half to develop the kit. It took a lot of hard work, but we're happy with where we are. We're getting great results and we think we're delivering a great value to people as well.
So I get a kit, right? The 3-gallon bundle. It comes with the nutrients, the soil, mm-hmm. Maybe some perlite, the pot, some gloves, the seeds, right? And I'm right. done. And I was successful in my first harvest. What's next, right? Like, how do I need to continue to come back to Buck Club? And if so, is there like a more convenient option or do I get everything from scratch? Like I'm trying to understand how this process goes on, right? Because one of the things yeah. that I'm assuming is you're also offering a very affordable entry level kit for people to be right. open to experimenting and going, right. hey, dude, I actually love growing my weed. because it also makes you get a lot more in touch with all things green, right? Once you start getting that feeling that you love growing cannabis, then you want flowers in your balcony and you want some indoor plants, at least in my experience and many others, right? So I'm assuming you're going for that repeat customer where the barrier to entry is very low. It's like, okay, what would you do? Do you want a whole grow kit where you can get 20 grams of cannabis in the worst of outcomes? Or do you want to spend $40 on just 2 grams of cannabis at a dispensary?
Right.
And it might sound like a no-brainer like that, but like then how do you renew that?
Sure.
That customer.
So, you know, it's funny. There's a saying in the business that smoking or using cannabis is not addictive, but growing cannabis is, you know, and it is, it's an amazing experience. I mean, the first time I did it, I mean, the plant is gorgeous. There's all kinds of colors. You watch it grow. There's the scent and the fragrances, you know, the whole curing process is amazing. It's just great. And so we expect people to come back, you know, and, you know, what we offer is, first of all, the kit is completely organic. And, you know, it is, we sell recharge kits. So if you want to do another grow and you just need to, you know, replenish the nutrients, we'll sell you those. If you want to come back and sell more seeds, we'll sell you those. We also have different size kits. So people can upgrade it. They might start with the 3 gallon and say, once they're having good results, say, well, maybe I'll step up and I'll go for the 10 gallon where I can put several plants, you know, in one pot. But really, to be honest with you, yes, you know, this is a business and obviously I'd like to make money with it, but there's a higher purpose that I'm serving. And that is really to try to help people and teach people to grow. And so I'm happy if that happens, if you learn to grow, if you become an enthusiast, and maybe your next step is to go past Bud Club, you know, and go buy an expensive setup. That's okay too. Maybe you'll come back and still buy your seeds from us because we have great seeds. But we really want to make a difference in the world and really help people. And this is my mission and the way I'm going to do it.
I love it. Heartwarming, man. For real. I appreciate it. Okay. You know, one of the things that I often think about, right? When we legalized in Argentina, the first thing we regulated was home growing. Oh. When Uruguay moved to become the first country in the world to legalize adult use cannabis, the first thing they regulated was home growing. Yeah, okay. Also clubs and sale and pharmacies, but that took some time to actually get set up, right?
Yep.
I got my permit for home growing overnight. And in Colombia, before legalizing medical cannabis in 2017, years before that, they had depenalized the home growing of up to 19 plants.
Wow.
Why is America so opposed to home growing? And I suspect part of the answer is capitalism, right? But like in your view, what is it that is driving America away from home growing, where we're seeing low rates of home growing, many states looking to ban home growing, and even companies lobbying against it as if that was their biggest competitor?
Honestly, I think it's greed. Listen, I've been around a while, and I'm very clear about the fact that the reason that the regulations are changing in many states is because they want the revenue. They want the tax revenue, right? And the way to get the tax revenue is to drive people in dispensaries and tax dispensary weed. And, you know, it also, to be honest with you, it takes a lot of time and a lot of money to set up an industry overnight. And in all fairness, you know, there are companies that are investing big money to create these dispensaries as well. And so I think the government may feel an obligation to protect that investment as well, because as we know, it, you know, it can be a challenging industry from a financial point of view. So I think that's all working together to say, you know what, we need to develop this dispensary business first, right? You know, and really get that up and going. In New York, as an example, the regulations are that they will not legalize home growing for recreational until a year and a half after the first dispensary opens up in New York State. So that's an example of giving the dispensaries the runway to get their business up and going so that they can generate profit and so the state can make money as well. And I think that's a lot of what's behind it.
I mean, I do see the point, right? It's I lean left, so to me, people should come before corporations. This show is about investing. This show is about stocks and about what will make a stock perform well. We usually address those issues.
Yeah.
But I love to see the side of it too, right? Because this is where I live, where I inhabit my personal life, right?
Right.
In this realm of the patient comes first, right? And the first thing we need to do and the most immediate way to make cannabis accessible to patients who need it urgently is through home growing, right?
Yeah.
We don't need to wait for facilities to be set up, for the genetics to be stabilized, for a processing to be approved, for licensing to be done, for a bunch of these things, right? And I'm an advocate for that. I feel like there's a need. But I also see the fear, like, you know, for people who are medicating and really using cannabis in a very medical way.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have argued, okay, but what if they don't know how to grow it right? And what if they intoxicate themselves?
Right.
What do you know about that? Like, is there a real risk? From where I'm sitting, it's like there's no real way to mess up a plant so bad that you get intoxicated. Maybe if you use enough chemical fertilizers with heavy metals, you might mess it up. I'm not saying there is no way to do it, but it's hard. It's really hard. You got to get real greedy or not read instructions.
Well, you know, the flip side of that is when you buy cannabis, you don't necessarily know what you're buying and what you're getting. And so at least, you know, when you home grow, you have a sense of you've done it. You've put it together. You choose the fertilizers and things that you want to use, and you have control. You know, you walk, you know, you buy cannabis in New York, and you don't know where it comes from, you know, especially if you're buying black market cannabis.
Yeah, I do. It's from California.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I just want to point out, you know, you're an experienced grower. So you look at it through that lens and you go, well, of course, like, you know, but I think that, again, most people, you know, in the U.S. are not growing. They don't have experience growing. They're intimidated by it. So the consumer demand, right, to be able to grow actually is not that strong. I think if people here were demanding, had the confidence to grow, and were demanding the right to grow, I think the government would respond. But right now, that doesn't exist. So it ends up being kind of an afterthought.
No, totally. I mean, even for an experienced grower, right? At least myself, I sometimes become lazy. I'm busy. I travel all the time. So I traveled for 2 months.
Yep.
When I came back, right? Yep. I had like just a bunch of empty pots with old soil. I had to renew everything. Like, I do see the appeal of just going like, okay, dude, just here's $40. Just send me everything.
100%.
I'm visiting different grow shops, finding the right mix of organic fertilizers and the soil and the perlite. And again, it's like just removing the soil and changing it and finding the seeds. I love this. Would love to hear a lot more. We need to have you back on. I'm going to drop the link there for anyone who's interested. We usually don't do product links, but I don't know. I dig this.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Elliot is not on today to scold me. So this is Javi's show today. Any last words you want to leave us?
I appreciate you putting the link out there. We're a young company. You know, it's hard to get a business going. And so, you know, and yet we believe very strongly in what we're doing. I believe that I'm doing the right thing. And so anything you can do to help support our businesses is greatly appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you, Dean. And thank you again for the patience and for joining us today. This was super interesting. I enjoyed the conversation and look forward to having you again sometime very soon or seeing you at our Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference in Miami, April 11th and 12th.
Oh, okay. That's great. I appreciate it. Ciao.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, that was all for today. It was a long show. Very, very interesting conversations, at least for me. You can drop your thoughts in the comments section. Be sure to like and subscribe and go check out bzcannabis.com for more information on our upcoming Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference, April 11th and 12th. April 13th, we're doing Benzinga Psychedelics Capital Conference, also at the Fountain Blue Miami Beach Hotel in, you guessed, Miami Beach. You can go to benzinga.com/events/psychedelics for more information on that one. And get your daily dose of cannabis news on benzinga.com/cannabis. Big shout out to our editor Maureen, to our associate editor Nina, to Yelena, to Nico, to Joanna, to Lara, to Vuk, to the entire team who really stays on top of the news every day and make sure that they can keep you up to date with everything that is going on in the cannabis and psychedelics industry. That is all for today. See you soon.